Hi, my name's Nancy Ellenberger, and I'm an alcoholic from Yucca Valley, California. And I'd like to thank Paul A. and the committee for having me here tonight, and for all of you guys to stay and listen to me. This is a dream of mine come true. I'm not a circuit speaker, but I love sharing my experience, strength, and hope, because I have a lot of it. And I started... I had my first drink when I was 12 years old, and I didn't start drinking alcoholically until I was 16 years old, and that's when this one's over here stopped. She was telling me she stopped at 16, and I just couldn't imagine that. I said, how did that happen? When I had my first drink, I really fell in love with alcohol because I lived in total fear. I was in total fear. I believed that I was, I behaved alcoholically even before I picked up that first drink. I always felt weird and felt I looked weird and out of place. And today I know I'm weird, but I can accept it. And some of you can accept it too. Not all of you. My career took off like at 16, and then I got married at 18 to a practicing alcoholic, and with that marriage, it gave me a license to drink, and boy, did I do a lot of that. And then 5 years later, we started having problems in our marriage due to alcohol. We were married for 5 years, and he was like a soulmate to me, and he was killed by a drunk driver in 1977. That kind of ages me. But with that, I drank more. I had an excuse to drink more. And then a month and a half later, my little brother, whom I helped raise, I come from an alcoholic, a good alcoholic family. My parents are in recovery now, and my little brother was lost at sea. He was 17 years old. He was a scholar student. And this year I had the opportunity, after like 27 years, they have a scholarship for him every year at the high school. And because of work or drinking or distance, I haven't been able to go in 27 years and present that award. Actually, there's three awards, three $500 scholarships. And I was able to do that this year, and it was very exciting to me. It was another first in sobriety, like this one is. You know, like I said, I've always dreamt of this, and I can't believe I'm not more fearful. And I think I know the majority of you guys in here. And that's neat. They say a host of friends will spring up among us, you know, and that's been my experience. Even though a lot of you, you know, don't like to put up with me, you know, I love you anyways. So then you guys got to stop me when it's 10 minutes because I'll just go on and on and on and on and on. But So then that occurred, and then I'll get down the line. I just drank a lot. I fell down a lot. I got in a lot of messes. I did a lot of bad decision making, and I ended up in LA area with a very, very good career in advertising. I was very young. And I made buku bucks, but about 5 years into that job, every year my income doubled, and about 5 years into that job, I was fired from that job due partly to alcohol and partly company ethics. So I didn't know what to do with myself at that time, so I came up with a really, really bright idea. And that idea was to become a professional barfly. And I was very, very good at that, too. It didn't pay as much, though. I lost a lot of money being in that career. What happened next was I ended up I had a party, and it was catered. It was a weekend party, and I spent $2,000 on this party. It was catered booze and food and everything, and I ended up back at work. I ended on Sunday, and I was after a whole week of drinking. I made sure that I was right across the street from the bar, and there was a nightclub underneath me, at this hotel, right in Laguna Beach. And I was a high-class drunk, you know what I mean? And I went to work the next day on that Monday, and I was 31 years old, and from here down, I swelled up like an elephant. I couldn't even get on my shoes, and I'm supposed to be wearing heels, and it doesn't work very good. And they sent me to, when they started having immediate medical care centers. And I went there, and the doctor says, do you drink? I said, oh, just a little. And he says, well, if you don't stop drinking, I was 31 at the time, because you're going to die. That was at 31 years of age. And I had been drinking since I was 16. So I continued, like a good alcoholic, I continued to drink for 4 more years. I didn't die, but I came close to it. I died spiritually, mentally, physically. And one day, I'll just get to the chase, I would always been able to stop on the 3rd of January, and I knew this year I wasn't going to be able to stop. And I started not being able to take care of myself, being self-supporting through my own contributions, and that had never happened to me before. All my money ran out, all my savings. And so what I did was I looked in the mirror and I quit blaming people, places, and things for what was happening in my life, especially my mother. And then what I did next is I cut off all my hair. And I did that so I wouldn't go into a bar or a liquor store, because I was so vain. And you know what? It worked. But then the next morning I woke up with a bald head and hungover, and I said, I need professional help. So I called a treatment center. I called a treatment center, and they said, okay, this was on the 3rd of January. I had my last drink on the 2nd of January. And I called him on the 3rd of January and hadn't had picked up a drink, because my enabler, believe it or not, had poured all about this much vodka down the sink, and I just about died. I said, don't you know that was my last drink? He goes, yeah, right. So, so I called them up, and they said, okay, this treatment center said, well, we could take you on the 22nd of January, and it was on the 3rd of January. And I said, and they said, and one stipulation, you're not to drink until then. And I said, what? How am I supposed to do that? You know, you guys are supposed to teach me how not to drink. And they said, they said something that I really heard. And they said, if you really want this program, you will not drink. And you know, I don't know how I did that. It was by the grace of God, but I surrendered, and I didn't drink, and I made it there. And I haven't had a drink since the 3rd of January 1990. And and I'm truly grateful for that, because I used to be a daily drinker. I was a Bud girl. I showered with Budweiser. I drove with Budweiser. I did everything. It was Budweiser was my lover. I was a Bud girl, but I didn't look like one, you know? And you know what, you guys? That treatment center, they helped give me a foundation, but it was when I got out of that treatment center feeling like I was going to drink. My first meeting was at Fellowship Hall a Saturday night, and I was going to leave at the break because I didn't feel a part of. And some of you guys might know this person, Howie, and he had a yogurt shop, and I was sitting in the back, and I was just trembling, and they had a break, and I said, oh, good, I'm going to go get a tall six-pack of Budweiser. And he reached out his hand, and he says, oh, are you new? I said, how could you tell? And he reached out his hand, And he said, hey, listen, I have a yogurt shop. I have these comp tickets. You know, why don't you come to my yogurt shop, and I'll meet you here tomorrow. Was a Sunday, and it was a 2 o'clock meeting, and I'll meet you here. Well, then I said, gosh, you just screwed up my drinking, because if I go do that, you know, if I got to meet you, then I can't drink. So I met him Tuesday, and he was one of my Eskimos in this program. And I just, you know, and I just want to let you know that my life is happy, joyous, and free today. There's a line in the 12 and 12 where it says, you know, life sends us lumps. Well, in the last month, I've been sent about 10 major lumps. And there's another line in the big book. It says, the joy of living we have even through difficulties and pressure. And, you know, and I used to say that a lot, but I hadn't really experienced a lot of that. You know, so my God has a sense of humor. And, well, now I know what that really means. And I am happy, joyous, and free today. I have a wonderful life. I turned 50 this year. I sold my motorcycle. I didn't want to end up in the emergency room all the time, you know. So, I'm as of a month ago, I found out I'm going through a divorce. But you know what? You guys are there for me. You know, I have my friends from Yucca Valley here too. I have my lower AA friends and my higher Desert AA friends and my Idlewild friends and my Boulder City friends and my San Felipe friends. I mean, I just have friends all over the place. You know, and my AA friends and other friends too. But you know, we all have a special bond. And I think I better shut up now and let Joe share a little bit with you before I talk too much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The pressure's on. Hi, everybody. My name is Deborah Uhalic, and I am an alcoholic. And I am really glad to be sober. I want to thank the committee for giving me this opportunity to speak tonight. I want to welcome all of you who are new to Alcoholics Anonymous. And God, we're a pretty good-looking group of sick people, aren't we? How many people are here in their first year of sobriety? A good group. Hey! I ask that because coming to a convention like this is such a wonderful opportunity to see that we really do enjoy life sober. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, believe me, I thought I was never going to have another happy moment. And I really thought it was the death sentence. But I was doing it because I was desperate. I come from Detroit, the murder city. I have a t-shirt that says Detroit is where the weak are killed and eaten, so we can tell you where I go. And I come from good Polish alcoholic stock. My parents, my dad was alcoholic, and I grew up with a lot of fear. I have a brother, and I don't know where he stands on this, but I know that as I was growing up, I was scared a lot, and I was afraid of the yelling in my house. I was afraid I wasn't good enough. I was just afraid. And what I did is I buried myself in my school books. God gave me the gift of being pretty good in school, and that was one of my solutions. And what I did is I just tried to do everything perfect and right so that I could try to keep things together. And that was a pretty hard job, believe me. As I got older, I found alcohol. And I'll tell you, one of the things that I found was that while on the outside I really wanted to be the good Catholic girl, inside of me there was another sort of person, sort of bubbling. And I know when Joe talked last night, he talked about the gals who wore the babushkas. Well, I like to look like the gal who wore the babushka with a tie under my chin, but I was really the one that wore the babushka with the tie in my mouth. But I didn't want you to know that. So I was kind of trying to live this dual life. You know, as I found out as I was in this program, that it wasn't just about, you know, trying to look good on the outside. I really at first thought I really wanted to be good on the outside and the inside, but it was really more about wanting you to think I was good and being able to do the other things that I really thought I should be able to do because I wanted to have a good time. What happened for me is I went to school for a lot of years, and when I found alcohol, what alcohol allowed me to do was to party. It allowed me not to be afraid of people. It allowed me not to be afraid of consequences. And, you know, over the years, what happened for me is I got to the point where I drank my way to California, basically with the schooling that I was in the process of doing. And when I got to California, I was alone. And before that time, alcohol really had worked for me. What alcohol did for me is it made me feel okay, and I had fun. And I didn't have any really bad things happen around my drinking. But when I got to California, and I'm kind of a late bloomer by most standards, I was about 27, 28 years old when I moved out here. Alcohol became my solution. And what happened for me almost instantaneously when I moved to the LA area alone was that I began to drink on a daily basis. And I never knew where alcohol was going to take me. Sometimes alcohol took me to a place where, yeah, I had a good time and it wasn't really any big deal. And sometimes where alcohol took me was exactly where I didn't want to go. I became one of those people who decided that, gee, alcohol was making me behave not like a good Catholic girl anymore. And as a result of that, I decided I had to change my behavior. And it didn't have to do with stopping drinking. What I wound up doing was I simply changed how I drank. And I stopped going out to the bars and the places where good Catholic girls shouldn't be going in the first place. And I became a solitary drinker. And alcohol really began to run my life. I drank not to feel alone. I drank so that I would not feel less than. I drank simply to escape. And one of the things that was part of all this schooling that I did is I studied alcoholism. And I actually had, I did research in alcoholism. And I tell you that because I really knew that I was becoming an alcoholic. But I couldn't do anything about it. I drank alcoholically for about 15 years, and I was always pretty quick out of getting out of the consequences. In other words, you know, when I was about to lose a job, I would quit. When I was about to, you know, end a relationship, or a relationship was about to end, I would jump ship. And on one occasion, you know, somebody dumped me, and I was absolutely aghast. But it had to do with my drinking, and how could that person do such a thing to me? You know, but the bottom line was little by little what was happening is I was accommodating my life to make my drinking a priority. Alcohol was running my life. I knew I needed to quit drinking, and I tried many times. On a couple of occasions, I almost got 90 days. I didn't know that 90 days was a magic number, so to speak. But what happened for me is I was not going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had done a lot of reading as part of my schooling about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought it was a place for losers. I was certainly not going to be part of this so-called cult. I had no idea really what Alcoholics Anonymous was about, but I sure wasn't going to be part of it. And I was going to do it by myself because, you see, my dad had stopped drinking on his own. He was not a happy man, but he had stopped drinking without any outside help, and so I thought I should be able to do that as well. When I was near the end of my drinking, I really didn't know where I was going to be at any given time. I taught a college class at one point, and I had the alcoholic flu, which some of us may have had from time to time. And I showed up because I thought my students really needed to see me. And I was pretty drunk. I not only had a little vodka to fortify me because vodka doesn't smell, but I had a little Benadryl because my nose was stuffed up. And I walked into the class and I started to talk. And this really smart alecky young guy in the corner yells out, "Why don't you try AA in front of everyone?" Can you imagine the snot? I was absolutely humiliated, but I'll tell you what, that didn't keep me from going on with my drinking. I still drank for a number of years. Where my drinking ultimately took me, even though at the end I actually called Alcoholics Anonymous a couple times drunk for someone else, and when they offered to send a woman out to talk to me, and I don't know how they knew that I was the one who needed to be talked to, I just said thank you very much and hung up the phone. So I had an inkling that there was something out there that I should be doing differently, but I really didn't know what it was. And at the end of my drinking, I was drinking around the clock on my couch. It was the holidays of 1992, and I started that last drunk with an innocent little bottle of sake. Just this little bottle, you know, the kind they give you as a gift over the holidays from your local Japanese restaurant. And what that little bottle of sake did is it set out that phenomenal craving in me. And I drank and I drank and I drank. And I had plenty of weekends when I couldn't stop drinking and plenty of nights when I couldn't go to sleep because I needed alcohol to calm me down. But this time I drank around the clock. I didn't eat. I hallucinated. I blacked out. And I wound up having a moment of clarity. And in that moment of clarity, what happened is I said a little prayer. And that prayer was, "My God, why am I killing myself?" I don't know what happened there. I believe it was God's grace. I know that God's grace is there all the time, but for some reason I was able to open my heart up a little bit to his grace at that moment. And I called a friend who had a daughter in Alcoholics Anonymous, and through a series of events I wound up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, taken there by a bunch of people who were not even alcoholics. And after they thought Alcoholics Anonymous was kind of an interesting adventure, after they went to two meetings, I had to do this on my own. And I started to show up at meetings. Now, I'm scared of people. And for me to walk into a room of strangers, not knowing what you expect of me, not knowing what I'm supposed to do, was absolutely beyond my power. And I believe that God gave me the strength and gave me the grace to walk into the 7 a.m. Winner's Attitude Adjustment of Alcoholics Anonymous in Studio City. And there were a couple of women there who held my hand, and what they did was they told me, "Honey, it's going to be okay." And, you know, my sobriety date is January the 18th of 1993, and it has been okay, even though at times I may not have felt that it was totally okay. Things may have not been going my way, but God has taken care of me. I got a sponsor real quickly within my first week or so, and she was the one of the activists in Alcoholics Anonymous in that meeting, and some of you know Susan D. She got me into action. She got me into working the steps. She showed me the importance of service, and I believe that I was able to engage in just enough selfless acts for enough time to allow my head to clear, to begin to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to begin to really work these steps. That first year, I believe, taught me what I do today in Alcoholics Anonymous. It gave me that foundation. I learned how to show up no matter what. I learned how to show up when things were good. I learned how to show up when things were bad and when things were indifferent. I learned just to show up. During that year, my mother, who had been ill for a long time, passed away in Detroit, and I had not flown without alcohol or anything in my system ever, and I was able to do that. And most of all, what I was able to do is to walk through that loss with you holding my hand. This was the day before I took my 9-month chip. And the beauty of it is that while I got through that grief and loss with dignity and grace, I've been able to walk other women and men through loss to show them that, you know what, you can get through this without alcohol. And that is the beauty of this program for me, is that our solutions in this room, and we have experience that we share with each other, and that there is a solution to every problem, and nothing is going to get any better with alcohol. My dad died a year after that, and by that time I had met Paul. Who some of you know. Paul and I met in central office doing service. And Paul was a man who would not take no for an answer. And one of the things that Paul, I believe, at least at first, was put into my life is to show me that there was fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a convention in the San Fernando Valley where I got sober. And I was doing Alcoholics Anonymous real regularly. You know, I had plenty of commitments at meetings. I had done the steps. I was living, you know, according to the principles of this program to the best of my ability. But I was being real serious in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then Paul comes into my life. And the San Fernando Valley Convention has a trip to Laughlin, and what they would do is go once a year to the River Roundup in January. And one of the things that Paul wanted me to do was to go on this trip with this group of people and have fun. Well, to go on a bus trip to Laughlin with a group of alcoholics was really not something that particularly met with my standards. In fact, they were even going to play bingo on the bus. And I thought, I don't think so. Well, God saw otherwise. And as it all turned out, I went on this trip, and I absolutely had a really, really good time. And what I learned is that, you know, we do have fun in sobriety. And what I also learned from that trip is that I got to concede to my innermost self that I'm an alcoholic, and that I'm one of you, that I'm no different, and that, you know, we all are the same. They all walk this path together. You see, one of the things that I didn't mention is that I'm a shrink. And I say that because for me, not only was I an alcoholic woman who had a great deal of shame about my alcoholism, I wasn't doing what a good Catholic girl should do, but because of what I did for a living, I thought I should know better. And a lot of people thought I should know better. So when I came into these rooms, for me, it was really a great giving up of my pride. And, you know, and I'm so thankful to God that I had the opportunity to surrender at that point and to be able to have a chance at a different life and to be able to be part of this wonderful fellowship, this wonderful program. You know, I do it a day at a time. We moved out to the desert about 8 years ago, and I just got into service out here just like I was back in the San Fernando Valley. And I'll tell you today that Alcoholics Anonymous is my life. I do other things, I work, you know, life goes on, but the bottom line is that without Alcoholics Anonymous, I know I would not have a life. I hope that if you're new, I hope that wherever you are in sobriety, that you never graduate from Alcoholics Anonymous, because when we graduate, just as Bob F. says, you know, we start to get amazed with ourselves. We think that, you know, the stuff, the people, getting all the things that we thought we should have becomes a central point of our lives. And if I lose sight of the fact that, you know, this is about my relationship with God, this is about sobriety, this is about sharing this program with another alcoholic, you know, I'm on my way out. I'll close and just say that I hope that, you know, you all continue on this road to sobriety, that you all continue to commit yourselves to love and service. And as my mother, who is long deceased, used to always say to me, go with God. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Bernice, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bernice.
My good friends. You know, coming over here this morning, I thought, or just prior to leaving my house, I better get that straight. I thought, well, what will I say in 10 minutes? And should I give you some wise profundities that come from the big book and meetings I attend? And, you know, all that kind of stuff went through my mind. And I flipped in my book, and it said, stick to your story. You know, stick to your story. So that's what I think I'll do. I'm going to tell you what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up in a very small town in the Midwest. I loved the town. I loved school. I was a cheerleader, a Girl Scout, worked in a varsity debate team. My parents were just kind of average. I had an older brother, wonderful brother, and I loved that town. Now, I must say that I was somewhat grandiose, and then I had plans. I knew I'd always leave that town, and I would go to New York City, and I would sit at the Algonquin Hotel, and I would, you know, discuss literature and all of the important things that went on in life with those folks. I was sure I would be welcome. I think I got that idea because I used to have to go through the library. It was cold in that country. I went to the library on my way to school, and I had a lot of those really big ideas, and I don't know if someone encouraged me or didn't, but at any rate, as it worked out, a young man was flying airplanes, came back to South Dakota. He was a native of California. I think my family and other people were entertaining he and some of his friends, and he at that time came up to me and he said, I'm going to marry you. And I had no intention of marrying anybody. I was very young. However, he did marry me. He brought me to California, to Santa Monica, and everything changed. My life changed dramatically. I loved the ocean. I was not particularly thrilled with California. I didn't think all the literary people were here. I didn't think anybody really, you know, and we were really close to, between Santa and Venice, very close to Rose Avenue, actually, if you know the area. My former mother-in-law had apartments there, and while I loved the ocean, I didn't think that I was going to get the kind of stimulation that my mind might require. We then bought a home in the Lakewood, Long Beach area. I quickly had three children, and I tried to do what I thought a mother and a wife would do. I tried to be a good mother. I tried to be a good wife. My husband was very capable of earning a living, so that was not the problem. As a matter of fact, I knew very little about that. It's like I went from my father to my husband. But the children started to become a difficult situation. My younger child had had surgery, tonsillectomy, went into a coma, and of course was never the same. My older daughter had cancer, and that was a major thing. And then I had some illness. My 20s were very difficult years. We had a lot of sickness. I went to a doctor. I was extremely nervous. It was all more than I could handle. My parents then moved to California to help me, actually. And I want to tell you about my first drink, because the doctor, I believe, had given me some kind of a tranquilizer called Milarel, Miltown, something like that. I couldn't take it. He said, drink a little wine at night and you'll be able to sleep. So I tried to do that, and it worked well. You know, I love that. I was driving along a little street near our home one day, and I was having, obviously, they didn't talk about panic attacks then, but I was extremely nervous, shaking, and I went rushing into this grocery store. It wasn't fast enough. There was a very sleazy bar next door. I went in, sat down. I was still visibly shaking. The bartender, I don't know if I asked for a drink. Someone brought me a drink. I drank it. I had a second drink, and I got very, very calm. Very calm. I found my medication. I knew that I had found an answer to something, and that was really my first drink where I realized alcohol could take care of the things that I needed to have in order to just live a reasonably sane life, I guess. I mean, that was my interpretation. I continued to drink. I was periodic, but I drank when I felt I needed to. I never knew when that was going to happen. And of course, I remember that bartender asked if I'd had an automobile accident. I said yes. I always lied about my drinking, always. I knew that drinking was not the right thing. My husband would have functions in his particular business. I never drank openly. I always drank in a sneaky way. The marriage lasted about 14 years. I was on my own with my children for 4 years, and my drinking got very, very, very bad. And of course, as we know, alcoholism is a progressive thing. And I was at this time, I could no longer hide it. I would periodically have times that I seemed to be okay, but most of the time, I can say this about my drinking. Anybody that ever saw me drink never invited me out for a drink. No one ever encouraged me to have a drink. So my drinking was pretty horrendous. I think I was the Jekyll Hyde kind of personality. But it was an absolute necessity. I somehow fooled another person for about 4 years. I was alone with the children. I didn't seem to drink as much. I met another man who I thought was just a heavy drinker, kind of a tough Irishman. We met in a social situation. We ultimately were married. And he discovered that I had a drinking problem. So he took me to Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not want to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought it was a very foolish book. I thought the people had something wonderful, but I didn't think it would answer my particular problem. I thought my case was different. I had that uniqueness. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous for 3.5 years, periodically drunk. I just somehow was not able to make that surrender. And during that time, it all just got worse. I would find myself drinking at night. Now, I don't even know where this husband was at that time. He was in my life, but I'm sure he didn't stick too closely by me because I was just difficult. My children were being cared for by my brother and by my mother and by other people. And it was just a crazy, crazy time. I remember standing in front of liquor stores at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'd have this big kerchief on and this big coat, and I would be shaking. The woman that ran that liquor store was just immaculate. She was so neat in the morning, and I was so disheveled and so remorseful and so guilty and so ashamed. She would ask me, why are you doing this? And I really didn't know. I just didn't know. I didn't think there was another answer. And of course, as I said, the suicide attempts continued. And I was going to AA, actually. And people in Alcoholics, I went to four-step houses, and then I would drink again. The people in Alcoholics Anonymous loved me. I certainly couldn't love myself. My last drink was on a 12, thank God, willing. My last drink was on a 12-step call. I was out there carrying the message. Went to see a drunk woman in Seal Beach, California. Three other ladies went with me. They thought that she was a smoker. We were afraid she'd set the house on fire, so we were going to stay all night. The other girls went in the den and went to sleep. I went out in the kitchen and poured myself a huge drink. You know, I had done my job. I'd committed to go to a function that was spiritual in nature in the LA area with my husband. I don't know who talked about this, but somehow we were going. At that time, I was afraid of freeways, escalators, elevators. I was afraid of everything. I had all those fears that we talk about. We did go, and during that particular service, while I thought it was all just nothing, I saw a baby. There was a little baby beside me who was rasping and couldn't breathe, and all of a sudden this baby started breathing normally. And I was just amazed. The parents started crying, my husband and I cried, and you know, something within me at that moment just knew that for me it was over. For me, there was a miracle. I wasn't going to have to do that anymore. I left that particular place, and we drove home, and that was September 18th, 1971, was my first birthday. That was probably the year previous, naturally, but I just knew the drinking was over, I was going to be fine, and I really threw myself into Alcoholics Anonymous. I met wonderful people. My sponsor became Dottie Harris, who had met during the previous drinking times. She was great with me. She listened. I worked the steps. I did the things that people told me. I showed up at a lot of meetings, and I am forever grateful. I am forever grateful that I met those people and that they were so good to me. They were good to me when I was drinking. They were good to me always. People in Alcoholics Anonymous have treated me very, very well. My children, how am I doing for time here? I can't see because you have my glasses. Have it gone? At any rate, I spent time in AA. I learned about our gift. I learned that we have the gift of sobriety. I learned that a lot by watching people. I heard people tell stories that were just unbelievable to me. I saw the actions they took. I saw the help that they gave to each other. I saw the love. I saw that part in the book where they were trying to be of maximum service to God and their fellows. Those are the things I saw. And I knew that I had to be a part of that if I wanted to stay sober, and I did want to stay sober. I became a good mother to my children. They were not too damaged at this particular time. I think Bertha and I are the only people who have tons of grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and my children are just fine. The last couple months have just been an indication of what you can do in Alcoholics Anonymous and with this program and with a loving God, because a loving God became such a part of my program. I do not go through one page of that book that I don't read about a spiritual awakening. were physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually ill. And believe me, I was all those things, from this girl who was a Girl Scout to this drunk standing in front of bars in the morning. There was a big change, and then it started to go up, and it's gone up ever since. This year, on the 20th of June, I lost my brother, who was always great and wonderful to me and a fine person. That was an emotional thing. But I was able to deal with that because of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, the good and the bad. You know, the good and the bad. That was a sad thing. But he, his life was good. His family's great, and it's not always so sad. That's a part of life. The passing is a part of life. I have, as I said, I have these grandchildren who do great things. This yesterday morning, my one granddaughter called on the cell phone. She's having a wedding the 21st. That's going to be a big thing. I'm included. I'm included in everything these people do. They care about me. They love me. I never did get, as I said, well, I visited New York a few times, but I never got to do all those wonderful things I thought I might do, which was maybe write about life. What I've been able to do with you folks is I've been able to live life. I've been able to live life sober. And because I think all of us, because we've been in that place where we weren't living life sober, we know how important it is. I don't know why I feel so teary. I guess I just feel teary. I'm not going to try to analyze that. The thing I want to say here, I'm with wonderful people here. And I just want to say to all of you and to thank all of you for my sobriety. Thank you for all you've done for me for such a long time. Thank you.
Hey, baby. Didn't have any more Kleenex, so I stole the dinner napkin. My name is Hope. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm here because I don't want to be here. I've learned that I have to practice doing things I don't want to do. I was very fortunate at the end of my drinking. The last several months, I had a lot of good days. And a good day for me was when I would pull down the blinds, put a towel in front of the door, unplug the phone, and I had a great big bottle of wine. One morning in 1995, I rolled out of bed in my apartment in Miami, and I fell on my knees in a pile of bottles, and it hurt. And I threw my head back and I said, "God, help me." And something happened. I had a new thought. The new thought was that I needed help. I had already come to terms with the fact that I was an alcoholic. I had gone to see my doctor a few months before that. I had alcoholic hepatitis from taking tranquilizers and antidepressants and drinking too much. And he read me the 20 questions, and he cried. Because for 15 years, he hadn't known that I was an alcoholic. I never told him that I drank. He was probably one of the few people I knew that didn't know I was an alcoholic. But he had told me at that time that the only thing he knew that had brought success for alcoholics in quitting drinking was Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had not been able to bring myself to go to a meeting. I couldn't do it. I had decided to play it out till the end, until I ran out of money. And I had a beautiful crystal bowl on my dining room table with all the pills that I had, and I put them in it because that was going to be the end. I would sneak down the stairs to the convenience store in my building when the store opened up in the morning, and I'd get my supply for the day and scurry back up the stairs. I was running out of money, but alcohol wasn't working anymore. It used to be, years and years ago, that I knew that if I had a couple of scotches, I'd feel better. It didn't work anymore. The quantity got larger and it stopped working. I used to know that by 10 o'clock in the morning, I'd feel better. Then it was noon, then it was 4 o'clock. Now I never felt better. I was pretty darn sick. And I got on the phone. I pulled the bottle and the phone into the bed, and I started calling treatment centers. I knew about AA. I had made my first husband go to Narcotics Anonymous years before because it was all his fault, you know. He had a problem. And it had been suggested to me at that time that I should be doing the same thing he was doing, but I didn't have a problem. I was working. It was his problem. Needless to say, that marriage didn't make it. But anyway, I started calling places, and they all called me back to say that my insurance was terrific. But the next day, the Betty Ford Center called me back to see if I was alive. And they called back a couple more times, and I decided it was time. I could do this. I was going to go. I didn't know what they did, but I knew that Elizabeth Taylor seemed to be doing fine. I always was interested in her because we have the same birthday, February 27th. I was born in 52, and she was born earlier. But I always kept track of what she was up to, and I knew she was okay. So I went, and this was a big deal for me to get out of my apartment and take a red-eye flight from Miami. First, I had to catch my cat, who had become feral in my apartment. That's a side note. Anyway, I did get out to California. I managed to get out. It took me 5 drinks. That was on June 22nd, 1995. And a few days after I was at the center, as a matter of fact, I went to put on the same outfit. It was one of those jersey things you pull on. It's got studs on it. You remember those things? And I thought, oh, I better fix. There was a seam opening up inside the knee. And I went and I looked, and it was the other knee. I had come all the way across the country with my pants inside out. You know what those things look like inside out. But it was the story of my life. It was a metaphor. I was the only one that didn't know. For many years, I had had trouble sleeping, and I had a psychiatrist who did 2 things for me. One of them was, we have this wonderful drug, and you can take it and drink. You know, while you're drinking, you can take this drug. That was not a good thing. But the other thing he gave me, which was good at the time, was he taught me self-hypnosis so I could go to sleep for a few hours. And I had this visualization that I had conjured up, where I would be at a 1930s rest home, you know, like in the movies, and I'd be walking across the green grass towards a bench under a weeping willow tree in front of a duck pond with flowers like in The Wizard of Oz. Okay, so I get my butt over here to the Betty Ford Center, and I'm a shaking wreck, right? And I've got to have a cigarette. And they said, there's only one place you can smoke. And they brought me to Fisher Hall, where I'd be living, and they took me to the back patio. There's the only place you can smoke. And I get up to the windows, and guess what? There's the grass, there's the bench, there's the weeping willow tree, there's the duck pond, and those are the flowers. And I'm looking at, I said, what are those flowers? And they said, those are oleanders. I had never seen one in my life. I get goosebumps now when I tell you. In my heart, I fell to my knees. I was in the right place. How? I don't know, but I was. So I think that softened me up quite a bit, and I followed directions. One of the first directions I got was from a lady named Mary Margaret. I don't know if she's here. I understand she's not well lately, but she brought a book study in, and we all were supposed to read in turn, and when it got to be my turn, I said, I have a question. When does the craving go away? Does the craving go away? How could anybody go through their life wanting a drink? And she closed her eyes and she closed the book. And when she opened her eyes, she said, I'm going to tell you what they told me. They told me if I asked God for help and followed the directions, that the craving would be lifted. And she said, and it was true. I can't tell you how long, but I believed her. The sincerity was so powerful. I believed her. And I knew what had happened when I'd asked God for help. I had the evidence. So I followed directions. And they told me to do a fourth step. They kept me, this was a 28-day program, they kept me 10 weeks. They kept asking me if I was willing, and I kept saying, yes, I'm willing. I'm willing. I have no money anymore, but I'm willing. And they worked it out, and I stayed. And you know you have too much time on your hands when your counselor gives you a roll of butcher paper, remember that? And says, here, this is for your fourth step. And I used it. They had a family program there, and one day they came to me and they said, we've made a staff decision that it would not be therapeutically beneficial to involve your family. And that was okay, too. I had been afraid of that. So there came a point towards the end of my 10 weeks there where I had to face the fact that everything was out in the open now at home. And it wasn't going well. I won't go into detail. I've only got 10 minutes. But I said, if I don't go back, isn't that running away? And somebody told me, you're running for your life. And I thought, you know, and I complained in group about it. I said, you know, what about my stuff? And my counselor gave a response. She told about watching her house burn down and standing with her little boy and her dog and watching everything go up in smoke. And I thought, what a bitch. How could she minimize my problems like that? She has to one-up me, you know? And a couple hours later, it was like a cartoon light bulb went on. I got out of a burning building. Why am I considering going back for the knickknacks? And I never went back. I wrote an amends to my mother, and I asked her to please dispose of whatever was left and keep the money for her trouble. And I stayed. I rented a room from a woman in AA who turned out to be instrumental. You know, the craving for alcohol never came back, but the alcoholic thinking came back when I was already living in this room I was renting from this lady. I'm a nice Jewish girl from New York. She's a nice Christian lady in Palm Desert, but we had Alcoholics Anonymous in common. And one day I woke up and I realized I didn't have a car and I didn't have a job. How was I going to get a job when I didn't have a car? How was I going to get a car when I didn't have a job? How was I going to get a job when I didn't have a car? You know that kind of thinking? Alcoholic thinking, circular thinking. I couldn't get out of it. And I shared about it in meetings. I whined about it in meetings. I was told to ask God for help and stop thinking. Just do the next indicated thing. But it was obsessive thinking, and it had come back. I couldn't remember the Serenity Prayer. It was too long. My brain took years before it regenerated enough to be able to remember that. So I went to this nice lady, and I said, please, give me a short prayer. And she gave me 5 words that have really helped me so much. I'm going to share them with you. God is my only source. And she said to repeat these 5 words, stressing one word at a time. God is my only source. 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 And again, I always get a little goosebumps when I do that, and it breaks the circuit. And I always am able to apply the tools that I've used after I've shut off the circular thinking. And I usually get a new thought when I've asked God for help. And the new thought I got was, get a bus schedule. You know, right around this time, I heard Dick Woodward at a meeting too. He said, my emotions are like the weather, they change. And this was a big liberation for me, not to be a slave to my emotions, to realize that I didn't have to buy into all the crap going on in my head, you know, that things pass. And I've followed the directions, and it's been 9 years. I've got a job. I've got a car. I have a wonderful husband. I'm just going to tell you one more thing. The first meeting I went to in Palm Desert, I was trying to fit in. I wanted to fit in. And I was standing at that coffee bar, and I very casually said, so how long does the meeting last? And an old guy turned around and he said, "Your whole fucking life." And as appalling as that was at that moment, I treasure that today, and it's true. Thank you for letting me share.